Your On the Mark podcast is loading now. The On the Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Joe McGranahan.
Greetings and welcome on board the WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. I'm Mark Lawrence, and directly across from me, His Honor, Papa, Chairman, Supervisor, Grand Poobah of Global Earthquake and Tsunami Response, and
Vice President of the Mayor's Association.
Oh, isn't that something?
Yeah, isn't that something?
That's a big deal. You could be chair in a heartbeat.
No, I don't want to be.
What a grim thought.
Lots of grim thoughts. I'm sure the people in the association feel the same way. What hath God wrought?
Who said that? Marshall McLuhan?
No.
Gerber?
Who invented the telephone?
Graham Bell?
No, it's telegram.
Samuel Morse.
Right.
Okay. All right. What else?
That was his first message. What hath God wrought?
Oh, and I had a history question for you today. What was it? I wanted to ask Joe. We talked about total deaths yesterday. Somebody asked me, what were the death tolls from World War II, all countries combined?
That's terrible. I've heard the number many times, and the estimate varies, but, I'd have to look that up.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not sure it's worth that. Suffice to say, 100 million isn't an unreasonable estimate, so we'll think about that. All right, we do have one email pending. We also got a survey over the weekend from U.S. Congressman Fred Keller, who hails from the humble abode in Cramer, PA. I believe he grew up in Sunbury and still attends a church in Sunbury. So if you want to see your congressman, don't go there, but that's where he is. And let's see. He's doing a survey. He wants your thoughts on a topic.
The estimate is 70 to 85 million people.
Okay, all of the World War II conflict. That is... I just can't get over that. We think of the Holocaust, 6 million, 7 million by some estimates, and that is certainly horrendous and terrible and breathtaking. But
they estimate it was 3% of the 1940 world population.
Wow. That's just amazing.
I didn't realize it was that high. I thought 32 million was the number in Europe.
And nothing pales in comparison to that. I mean, is that not the deadliest conflict that ever occurred?
I would think. I can't imagine any deadlier.
All man-made. Mussolini, Hitler, Stalin.
Tojo.
Roosevelt.
Well, there's new thinking now that the Emperor of Japan, we gave Hirohito a pass at the end of the war, largely thanks to... the decision that the Japanese would accept unconditional surrender if all we did was allow the emperor to remain even as a figurehead.
Mm-hmm.
And that was General MacArthur who supervised that and did a wonderful job with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
so when we see relief celebrations of VJ Day... This was truly a historically wonderful celebration globally, right?
It was, both of them were, VE Day and VJ Day.
Okay. So the amount of, how ecstatic can a planet be?
Pretty ecstatic.
Right. We think of it, okay, so we're noting a celebration of a big milestone in U.S. history, and it certainly is that.
I think there was relief that they survived among the people who were left and the fact that the war was over.
Oh, my father talks about the fact that he was on a boat to Japan in the U.S. military when the war ended, and he was quite relieved.
Yeah, I'm sure he wasn't at all sad about turning around and coming home.
No, he was not. And he makes note of individuals who were disappointed, gung-ho soldiers who were eager to fight Japan.
That gung-ho-ness would have left quickly when they saw the casualty reports that would have ensued. That's why I always thought Harry Truman was one of our greatest presidents, because he didn't hesitate to use the atomic bomb to shorten the war. Ultimately, it saved more lives than not using it. But, revisionist history today as well, he should have never dropped that bomb. The Japanese were on the verge of surrender. But they weren't. Well, and they should have surrendered a long time before that if they were reasonable people, but they weren't reasonable people then.
But in history's hindsight still views that as a life-saving ending of the war, right?
Saved American lives, no doubt about that.
Okay. And allies, and certainly the death toll in Japan was high, but they had invoked...
Can you imagine what would have happened if after the war, if Truman hadn't used that, had invaded Japan, and we had lost hundreds of thousands more of American troops, and then the word came out that he had a bomb that could have ended the war and didn't use it?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine what would have happened then?
Oh, boy. You're right. Good point. Yeah, we certainly love to second guess.
Well, today we do, and the light of today's world, where everything is... as you put it, respect and love and graciousness and kindness.
Well, respect. I don't know about that. Kumbaya. What we decided? We looked up yesterday.
God come here. Didn't
come
tell
here.
Me?
Yeah, come by here.
come by here.
Right. Means God, please come by here. We need you. So, we can certainly have a kumbaya moment every day here. We would God's presence would be much appreciated here.
Well, there are some days I don't think you'd want to come into this room.
All right, well, we'll find out if this is one of those days. We are enjoying the early frivolity prior to the open of our show.
Yes, discussing the fatalities in World War II is certainly frivolity.
Well, yes, but...
that's a real knee slapper.
You know history, and I think that's a real... joy for me to know that between you and Lynn Hall here, a fabulous production director, I can ask good questions about the Civil War and all of our nation's history and get good, definitive, knowledgeable answers. It's like having Google at your fingertips.
Yes, Lynn and I always discuss what books we're reading at the moment.
Ah, okay. History. And nothing about current events or kumbaya or anything like that, right?
Well, remember, history was current events when it happened.
Okay. Current events years ago.
Right.
All right. You are listening to On the Mark, WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show. On the Mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. Our toll-free line is open. Call us 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com. We would just love to hear from you. 1-800-795-9565, and you could email us at onthemark@wkok.com. Let's see, you can text us at 70236 as well. So we would just love to have some human interaction with you.
Or some inhumane action with you, depending on your the way you feel at the moment.
One of our good listeners sends us a tweet that says, I hear tons of sirens in Sealing's Grove.
Oh, so, okay.
All right.
Well, we'll check that out.
We'll send that to the newsroom and see what's cooking.
Have so you watched you the coverage of the president's G7 performance? I'm astounded by the differences in the way he's being covered. On MSNBC, if you've listened to Morning Joe, you would think it was an absolute drooling, raving maniac who represented us over there, lied about everything. Although there is one, I didn't get to fact check this, but supposedly he said that the reason he didn't attend the climate summit with the other leaders was that he was holding one-on-one meetings with India and some other people, and then they showed the picture of the Indian representative actually at that conference, so he couldn't have been. So I don't know whether that was true or not, or exactly what he said.
Well, it sounds like he might have been telling the truth.
Well, no, except that Trump didn't go to that meeting, and apparently they did. So he couldn't be having one-on-one meetings with them if they were somewhere else, right?
Right. No, that's true. It can't be two places at once.
Even Trump can't do that. But, you know, it's interesting. I'm reading a fascinating book. It's by Doris Kearns Goodwin, who, in my opinion, is one of the greatest historian writers around. It's called Leadership in Perilous Times. And what she's done is she's taken Abraham Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, and Lyndon Johnson and compared how they started and their leadership and how their backgrounds led to the way they led during perilous times. And I look at President Trump and I try to figure out where he would fit into this,
mix. You mean if he were in a perilous time or in a manner of speaking
how he would handle it. In other words, I'm looking at those four men and how they were framed, what their background was, and how their background led them to the kind of leaders they became. And I'm not certain I understand President Trump's background would be very similar to Teddy Roosevelt's and Franklin Roosevelt's in that he grew up in privilege, he grew up in great wealth. you know, so he had almost everything handed to him at one point or another. But those guys had other qualities that led them to become the leaders they were, and those other qualities don't appear to be President Trump's strong suits. So I wonder what form the type of leadership he provides. I'm looking particularly at this issue of tariffs, where he continues to insist that China is paying all these tariffs. You know,
I don't think he really thinks that. I think he's just telling the media that so that they'll pass that word
along.
The
only way they would be paying them is if the American people who are purchasing from the Chinese went back to their suppliers and said, look, your government put tariffs on our products. You're going to have to cut your prices or I'm not going to buy, in which case China would be paying. You know, MSNBC ignores that fact completely, that many of the manufacturers or many of the distributors could have gone back and asked for price concessions.
How many Americans can tell you, oh my gosh, I had to do X because of tariffs? No consumers, just farmers. Farmers, of course. And the president has got to be losing farm support by now because soybeans are rotten in the field. And even with the president's assistant, there's just no market
for these.
But
what happened to being willing to pull together? Almost everybody except the most rabid people on the left will concede that what President Trump is trying to do is worth doing. The Chinese have serious issues with France. With England, you know, the European common market. They have all these issues. They're doing the same thing to them they did to us. They're stealing their technology. They're ignoring patents and international agreements and just doing whatever they want to do. Somebody had to take them on. Now, President Trump's done that.
He's doing that.
And
right.
So if I have to pay a few bucks more for something in order to achieve that kind of goal, I'm willing to do it.
Well, I think you, given that opportunity, you would do it, as would probably most Americans and probably barely notice. But what we're talking about is farmers are losing their livelihood. I do not know of any local bankruptcies, but we do know nationally that bankruptcies among farmers are always an issue and are a greater issue now that the tariffs make what U.S. soybeans and some other products in the U.S. less competitive. And my understanding is it's not as bad this year as it was last year. A lot of farmers got caught with the imposition of the tariffs with soybeans in the field. And fortunately, the farm welfare that the president came up with did help a little bit. But this year, they didn't plant that. So this year, they planted, you know, corn or wheat or something else that you could get rid of on the global markets without paying, you know, without suffering the higher issues associated with tariffs.
So, don't you think in the long run, though, if people know that these tariffs are in place, and now we have a new round set to go in September 1st, if the president follows through with what he said.
Well, and this would be on products that you and I would recognize, electronics and things that we generally don't need.
Well, and supposedly the last manufacturer who assembles television sets in America is going to shutter its plant and operations and cut down 130 of the 150 jobs it has.
And they make TVs?
They assemble them from parts purchased from China and other places, most notably from China. So that's the last
American...
What brand
of TV is it then?
I don't think it's a commercial TV that you would buy to watch Channel 21
or something
like that. But I read the story, and I don't remember the name of the company, but, you know, nobody's manufacturing TVs from scratch here in the United States of America anyway. But what if the tariffs provoke somebody to start that business? They said, look, you know, it's now profitable for us to manufacture here in America. Would that be bad?
Well, no, that'd be a good thing. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think anybody's concerned that the tariffs can't help at all whatsoever. It's just that individuals who have to suffer now are doing so, and that would be individual businesses
in
the U.S. No, not at all. Not that I can detect.
You haven't
anyway.
Noticed the prices of anything you use that says made in China going up. Almost everything you get's made in China.
Well, first of all, I'm not allowed to go to the grocery store. So,
well, probably a smart move on the part of your lovely bride.
Right, but I hear.
But I do all the grocery shopping.
Okay, well,
I
see the receipts going up every single week on everything. But they were doing that long before tariffs took effect. You know, bread is $5 a loaf if you buy just the wrong brand.
So, where are you paying $5 for a loaf of bread?
What is it, $3 a loaf is the average?
Well, the custom breads are you can buy bread for far less than that.
$3.
But if you want my wife's partial to Pepperidge Farms whole wheat bread, that's $3 a loaf.
Okay,
that's a little less than $3 a loaf.
All right, so, and that price has been going up. Peanut butter price has been going up and so on. So anyway,
peanut butter isn't imported from China.
I didn't say that it was. Either is bread.
Oh, okay.
So I just, my point is that I don't know that the tariffs are having an impact on groceries. Grocery prices have been going up 2% every year on their own.
But yet you're saying the farmers are suffering. So.
Right. Well, I know that to be true just because of my acquaintance with several people who are farmers. They do have, but they have had to have a new strategy. So, you know, they're not going to grow soybeans, even though they'll grow them. There'll be very little market for them. They'll sign up for the president's help and they'll get some money back. It's just a wasteful process, so they're not interested in that.
Well, we've had farm subsidies in this country forevermore, and there are some people who think they've long outlived their usefulness.
Well, this is a new set. This is temporary. Well, I think all the way back to where we started.
So were the ones we originally started putting in the 1930s.
okay. Well,
they're just temporary too, Mark.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So what else is temporary?
You talk about an oxymoron. That's a temporary tax.
The sales tax in Pennsylvania, temporary. I hear that from time to time. The Johnstown flood tax. What was I going to say? All the way back around to your example of opening the factory. Yes, I think opening a television factory in the U.S. could be okay if you had good union workers there and paid a life-sustaining wage. But what happens when the tariffs, when this is resolved, then that company's back on the global market?
Then that depends on whether or not the American people will pay a few dollars more to buy something manufactured in this country, or whether, as you always like to say, they'll head back to Walmart for the Chinese goods they've always bought.
Mm-hmm. And Target. They don't get a
free
ride.
And Target, too. Okay.
So, right. Yeah, good point. Well, and, you know, do we want to pay the real price for some things that would, you know, helps the country, or do we want to pay as little as possible? You know, we certainly know of people just doing whatever is humanly possible to save money rather than paying the real cost of things.
I give President Trump high marks for being willing to take the Chinese on. Someone had to do it, you know, and despite the fact that MSNBC butchered that cut of him saying, "I am the chosen one," to make it sound like he was claiming to be God. You didn't hear that?
I didn't hear the chopped up version. I heard the entire version, which in context.
Well, they stopped right after, "I am the chosen one."
He's calling attention to the fact that he's the only president assertive enough to take on the Chinese.
Right.
That much I gathered.
You know,
from
and
it.
he's got some serious issues, I think, that he's dealing with, and I think he's dealing with them effectively. I think he's doing a wonderful job of keeping people off balance. And I think that's a negotiating tactic that I've used over the years. If people believe you're irrational enough to do the one thing they fear, they're going to do what they have to do to keep you from doing that. You know, and I think he does. I think he deliberately keeps people off balance.
Well,
and
it just with the brinksmanship, setting deadlines, saying if and only if you don't negotiate a favorable contract by Tuesday.
And changing his mind, saying today I'll do this and tomorrow maybe I won't do this and the next day I will. What I would say if I were the Chinese is, hey, let's get this guy into a room and let's solidify something before he goes off the deep end.
He's just so crazy. He does plan to impose more tariffs next week, so.
And this morning, I saw in Morning Joe, I mean, they're basically insinuating that Trump has become completely unhinged and irrational over his performance at the
G8. Why do you even watch Morning Joe? It just irritates you.
It does irritate me because
it's not true.
They make absolutely no pretense at fairness, absolutely none.
Well,
there's
like
no attempt
Fox
to count.
News on
no,
the opposite.
Fox counterbalances. They hired Donna Brazil and they've hired some other people on the left. There's nobody with a right-leaning opinion. If you talk to Morning Joe, he phrases his questions by telling you what answer he wants from you.
And the president is so crazy, this will never work, correct?
He says, and we all know the president has become unhinged. Now, what do you think about this thing that he did? Well, how do you counter that by saying, well, excuse me, Joe, I don't think the president is unhinged.
We got a caller on the line, 1-800-795-9565. Cindy, last caller before a quick break. You are on the mark.
Good morning, gentlemen. You know, I look on this whole issue with the tariffs. I'm willing to pay extra. I just might choose not to buy whatever it is. That's, or I'll pay extra for it to be American. I do it every time I shop. I have a decided preference. We just bought more furniture. When I went to the store, I only wanted to see furniture that was made in the United States. I made that very clear. Happily, that's what the store had, so it made it much easier for me to make my choices. You know, and if I can't afford that, then I guess I just can't afford new furniture. It's not going to, you know, my world's not going to end if I don't have a new coffee table. I think we forget that as all these jobs are exported across the world, that means that what they contributed to our economy is lost. They often talk about this when they did the gas pipeline, when they do the highway, when they do other kinds of projects, they say, this is going to create X number of jobs. So what we're agreeing to in importing all of this stuff is we're agreeing to deleting these jobs. And what does that mean? Well, then our neighbor isn't working, and our neighbor isn't paying taxes, and our neighbor isn't contributing financially to the school district, to the county, to the township, to the borough that we live in. Now, you know, it gets so bad perhaps that they end up being a draw on the public welfare system. But thank God that whatever that thing is only $2. Well, isn't that short-sighted and foolish?
Well,
we're stripping the dignity of work from our neighbors, and we're adding to our bill because then the same people will call in and gripe about paying higher taxes. Well, hell yes. If you're not going to pay more for a product that's made in America employing your neighbors who are also paying taxes, then you're going to pay higher taxes to make up for the fact that they're not working.
Well, I hear what you're saying, and it makes perfect sense to protect your neighbor and to keep jobs in the U.S., but gosh darn it, all I want to do is save money. That is all I want to do. My neighbor...
But you're not.
Oh, no, that's your fallacy, because you're not saving money. Oh,
because
I did, because I went to Walmart, and my product only cost $10 instead of the $20 real cost, and so therefore I've saved money.
Well, you didn't. Because I would argue you didn't, Mark. You just moved it from pocket A to pocket B, the
right.
expense. You'll pay more now to because you'll have to pay more of the taxes. You know, Walmart is among the corporations that seek to have their local property taxes decreased. They actively do this. So they're contributing less to the county and the school district and the borough and the township. Well, the township, the borough, the school district, and the county don't go, well, that's okay, we'll just do without. I don't know if you remember, a few years ago they were handing out, in here in the region, handing out these KOZs. And I said, well, who's going to make up that lost revenue? And, of course, the response from the chamber president is, well, that's up to the local folk. Well, the local folk don't decide to cut spending. Show me where the school district anywhere has lowered taxes and cut spending, only on the rarest of occasions. Sealands Grove had 20 years in a row they raised taxes every year to develop a ginormous kitty, but that's beside the point. So you're not, the illusion that you're saving money, Mark, is false.
I know. I realize this. I'm egging you on because I know the real cost of money saving.
I see. You're just jerking my chain. Okay.
No, it's a conversation. It's not a jerk. It's a conversation.
I think he is pulling your leg here, Cindy. I think he honestly believes that.
I think some people operate under the illusion that they're saving money. And I'm saying to you, if you're unhappy about the rising costs of government that are all directed at social amelioration or the cost of government itself, then more people paying into that cost means you pay less.
But then isn't what President Trump's doing with tariffs worth the fight?
Yes, yes. And
I agree.
You know, I got to say this. If I opened a business and I decided to sell crumpets, right, and I make 1,000,000 crumpets because I'm just sure that everybody's going to want crumpets.
Oh, Horace crumpets.
And then it turns out that people don't want crumpets.
Hmm.
Whose responsibility is that?
Well, the KOZ.
Yours for misreading the market.
Exactly, Joe.
Right.
It's mine for misreading the market and for overextending myself. So when farmers speculated that they could sell lots and lots of whatever to whomever, and those people say, thanks anyway, we don't need it or want it, whose responsibility should that be?
Right,
I agree that it's a sad development for them. You know, I buy a gallon of milk. It's just my husband and I. Every week, I'm trying to help the dairy farmers, doing my part. I'm buying cheese that's made locally. But that doesn't make it my responsibility that in your guessing how much you could sell of whatever crop it is, you misguessed. Just like if I made 1,000,000 crumpets and couldn't sell them all, it's not Mark's fault. It's not Joe's fault.
Well, that's not
it's
what happened to farmers.
It's a bad guess on my part.
That's not what happened to farmers locally. You know, they were playing on a relatively even playing field, and then the president imposed a tariff that changed the value of soybeans. We have to go, Cindy, and take the break.
All
right.
And we have
thank you so much
in.
For the call. Yeah, they got the rug pulled out from under them. All right, quick break. Returning momentarily.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SM Seaway. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors Way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SM Seaway is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC Way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Joe McGranahan.
Great team, and welcome on board the WKOK live telephone talk show On the Mark. I'm Mark Lawrence. Mr. Joe McGranahan is directly across from me. Rob Center is our fabulous producer, makes everything sound as good as it does. And Mr. Matt Catrillo's over in the newsroom, so he's monitoring traffic. He just says there's a couple slowdowns at the traffic lights in Northumberland, but that is about it. Thursday in Northumberland, new detours go into effect in the afternoon. Lots of folks are saying, okay, Thursday, that's fine. What about Thursday morning? You'll be fine Thursday morning, but Thursday afternoon, they start going around and fixing the lights and making them activate, and then shortly thereafter, detour signage will go up, and Route 11 southbound through Northumberland will be detoured onto Orange Street. The truck ban will take effect, and all those traffic signals will be on full normal cycle in Northumberland. On the Mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. Our toll-free line is open. Call us 1-800-795-9565. You can email us at onthemark@wkok.com or text us at 70236. On the Mark is brought to you by the Sunbury Motor Company, and they invite you to do as I have done. Go to the Quick Lane on North 4th Street in Sunbury. Tell them you got a road trip planned and that you are looking for an opportunity to save a lot of money by making sure your tires are inflated properly, so they will immediately pump you up with a nitrogen. You tell them that you want your gasoline mileage to be super, so they'll replace filters. You tell them that you have an old car and it even has old-fashioned spark plugs and a distributor cap. They will immediately fix the points and plugs and make sure that you're good to go. And tell them your car is really old and that your crank handle is not very cranky, and so they'll fix that.
Don't you think they'd notice that your car was really old when you brought it in?
A lot of this I ad-lib, and I don't really think it all the way through.
You're making them sound like you have to tell them that your car is old. I think they could pretty well identify that over there.
They'll figure it out. Okay. Yep. They are that smart that they would see a 1941 Model T and say, holy smokes, that...
Well, my Maxwell, if I brought my Maxwell in, would they know that?
Ooh, I don't even know what a Maxwell is. I've never heard
You
that.
Never heard Jack Benny. He always made a joke about his old Maxwell, the noises it made.
Oh, okay. All right.
And so, Mel Blanc did the voice for that.
Yeah, Mel Blanc. Yeah, you're right. He did.
Really? Boy, this is great trivia. What else do you guys know?
A lot, but we're not going to share it with you. Okay. Keep going.
All right. Moving on. Let's see. Sunbury Motor Company. But back at the Quick Lane where Mark has brought in his vehicle, and they're saying, the gas gauge isn't working. That's actually a real thing. And that the vehicle's in need of repair, and they'll take good care of it. And if it turns out that on some whim of a dilemma that you cannot replace that vehicle or repair it, they'll say, look, we have new vehicles, Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln, or pre-owned vehicles of almost every type and species that have gone through their 100-point checks and are ready to go, and they would just love to take care of you in that manner at the Quick Lane. Tell them you got a road trip plan. They'll get you ready for that. They'll pump you up with nitrogen. If your vehicle needs towed, they'll tow it damage-free. If it needs washed after the servicing, they'll take good care of that. If you say, look, all I need is an oil filter, that's it. Well, I guess they'd have to change the oil, but that would be one service they would just just love to take good care of you if necessary. Quick Lane, Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. and Saturday, 6:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. In the news, fire damaged a home on Route 147 in Point Township earlier this morning. Fire broke out around 1:30. About a half dozen volunteer fire companies from three counties involved in that firefight, including Shamokin Dam, which is a wonderful community in Snyder County, and the volunteer firefighters from Mahoning Township, Montour County, were there assisting. The fire was extinguished in a few hours. There were no injuries reported at the scene. The fire had been called in by a passerby. Route 147 was closed for a time, but has since reopened. The annual lease renewal and the future of the Montour Preserve, hot topics of the Montour Recreation Commission monthly board meeting last night.
It's my recommendation to you that we extend the Montour Preserve lease or request an extension of the lease for one more year. This would be October 1, 2019 through September 30, 2020. We have the funds in hand. We can and should continue the Montour Preserve lease for one more year.
That's the Montour Area Recreation Commission Director Bob Stout asking to renew the lease, which was approved by the Board of Directors. There's still plenty of work to be done when it comes to raising funds. Montour County Commissioners are going to assist.
I can't get into specific details, but the Montour County Commissioners are currently working to develop a new source of funding for us that may more than make up for our shortfall. I don't have an answer for you here tonight, and I can't give specifics at tonight's meeting, but I do have confidence that hopefully by our September meeting, we'll be able to offer something more tangible and hopefully have, you know, better news to report.
He says it takes about $130,000 to run the Montour Preserve. A former Penn State team doctor is suing the school. Football coach James Franklin and athletic director Sandy Barber claiming he was ousted after complaining to school officials about being pressured to clear players to return from injuries. The lawsuit filed Friday by Dr. Scott Lynch in Dauphin County was first reported by Penn Live. Lynch was removed from his position as director of athletic medicine in March and replaced by Dr. Wayne Sebastianelli, who had previously held the position until 2013. Lynch is seeking $50,000 damages. Penn State Health and Milton Hershey Medical Center, where Lynch is employed, are named as defendants. In the lawsuit, Lynch claims Franklin attempted to interfere with the doctor's authority on multiple and repeated occasions. Lynch says he reported Franklin's wrongdoing to Barber and athletic director Camille Green, who's also named as defendant. Lynch claims in the suit that on or about January 24th, Barber and Green communicated to Dr. Kevin Black of Penn State Health that Lynch be relieved of his assignment as a football team orthopedic physician and director of athletic medicine. Requests for comment from Franklin and Barber were directed to Penn State Health in a statement. Penn State Health said the transition was made for the best interests of student athletes in mind. Quote, while we reject Dr. Lynch's claims and will vigorously defend our program and its representatives, we remain grateful for him and his 5 years as director of athletic medicine at Penn State. Finally, it's safe to cross where the green Viking is walking, but stop when the red Viking is standing. That's the message to pedestrians in Aarhus, Denmark, as it unveils new crossing signals to celebrate the history of Denmark's second largest city. A city council member unveiled Monday the first of 17 traffic signals featuring Vikings holding axes and shields, but not horned helmets. There's no evidence that Viking helmets actually had horns. The lights will form a circle around downtown Aarhus, which was founded by Vikings in the 8th century and became a bustling harbor city. What did you know? See, now you know some more Denmark history. The actual city of Aarhus.
I believe they had horns on their helmets.
You think? Oh, yeah, because Hagar the Horrible does.
Right.
So we assume all Vikings did. Well, we don't see, you and I have watched two separate series about Vikings, and there's no horns on their helmets.
I don't remember, to be honest with you, every single character in every single
battle.
Well,
yeah, they don't have any horns on them.
Says you.
They have all kinds of head shaving and
tattoos,
hair
in their
pulling
heads,
and
right.
Braiding and all sorts of other stuff. But not that. All right, 1-800-795-9565. We have an email that I see my first name at the very beginning of it, so we will read that out loud, and whatever question is asked of us, we will try to answer. Let's see. Paul's standing by, talking about the real cost of stuff. Good morning, Paul. Thanks for waiting. You're on the mark.
Well, gentlemen, it seems that history does not repeat itself, because what used to be when you bought a product and it was made in America, it lasts because it was made of quality. How many parents buy clothes today that their children can get hand-me-downs or shoes the same way? That would save the parents money in buying more, but everybody then felt they had to have money. So they cut down on the quality of the product so that they would buy more. But if you don't buy more, you also save natural resources in order to make the extension of that product longer.
Yeah, but you don't you don't send money into the pockets of the corporate leaders and investors and so on in the country. The goal of business is not to sell a product and hope that you keep it for 20 years and hand it down and everybody get good use of it. The goal of companies is to make mo.
All right, but what are you going to do when the natural resources come to an end?
Oh, come on, Paul. Science will fix that. Don't worry about that. When the landfills are full and our resources are gone,
we'll dig up the landfills and take the stuff out and recycle it.
Every third world country has become a second world country and no longer wishes to do our bidding for nothing. We'll figure it out. Science will take care of it. We'll move to the moon. There's probably indigenous people there we can exploit.
Admiral Halsey one time had his flight leader come to him and said that he wanted to be decommissioned because he was sick and tired of sending men to their death. And Halsey told him, he says, if you are sick about sending people to your death, he said, I do it every day, and if it's not me, it'll be somebody else. He said, I want to tell you something. There are no great men that are born. There's just common people that arise to a situation and do the best they can with what they got.
All right.
Well, you're paraphrasing there, Paul, but that's close enough for government work.
Well, if Trump can do it, I guess I can do it, too.
Yeah, excellent point. Yeah, he sets a low bar. All right, thank you so much, Paul. Very much appreciated. All right, Joe, the email, if you don't mind.
Right, this emailer is taking you to task. Mark, you claim to be a conservative. No, I don't think he does. After listening this morning, you sound like you lean more to the left. Now you got it right. Also, did you compile your Trump list, the 6 things you dislike about him or his policies? I think that our writer got that a little off. It was 6 things you did like,
right,
wasn't it?
I have 96 things I don't like that the president's done, and counting.
Oh, you have that list prepared?
70-some.
You have the 96 things list?
I do, in my head.
You haven't written it down yet.
I call it almost everything.
You have the 6 things you do like.
I do have the 6 things that I liked. I did write them down weeks ago. One, that he hasn't gotten us into a war. He's had multiple opportunities to actually fire on other countries and did not do so. And then when he did retaliate against Syria, it was wholly appropriate, I thought. So that was, I thought that was an okay thing. Let's see. Number 2 was he did not attack Iran when he had the perfect opportunity to do so.
Well, and that's redundant. You just said number 1 was he didn't attack anybody, didn't bomb anybody.
Well, no, he didn't actually get us into a war. And in fact, is overseeing our removal from Afghanistan. So that's sort of the war aspect. And then separate, he had an opportunity to do an attack on Iran and declined to do so.
Okay.
I don't remember. Do you remember he went like right up to the edge and said I was going to, and like missiles were in the air? Does that sound familiar?
No, missiles were in the air.
Okay. Yeah, this was about 6 months ago. So, well, in any event, he had a chance to attack Iran and didn't, which I thought was the bigger person. He talks about the idea of using building a better border between us and Mexico as an element of homeland security. Now, lately, immigration's taken all the breath out of that discussion, but homeland security was the original conversation. And to that end, some sort of border security would be ideal. This idea that you and I can be in Mexico and sneak into the U.S. is just ridiculous. So we should have a strong border, whatever, for the sake of homeland security. Immigration is another topic. Let me think. I wrote down Democratic Party. I wonder what I meant by that.
I'm curious. So how can you say immigration and the border are not one and the same?
Well, I think they have to be the same. But the president's policies about immigration offend me, but or his actual feelings about immigration offend me. But when you come to the border wall...
Oh, so you don't like immigrants because he said he does support strongly immigration.
Well, legal immigration. Yeah, legal immigration.
And so did President Obama, by the way, who condemned very strongly illegal immigration.
Yeah, wasn't he the...
He was the deporter-in-chief.
Thank you. I'll never remember that phrase.
His quotes are really adamant about the fact that we need to stop people from coming across our border whom we don't know, we can't identify. Of course, he was a Democrat, so that makes it okay. A Republican does the same thing, and he's a racist.
The I wrote down Democratic Party. What did President Trump do that related to the Democratic Party?
He defeated them.
Well, yeah, but this I thought was good, though. I wouldn't think that defeating the Democratic
so
Party would be ideal.
So your list of six things isn't complete.
He hasn't changed gun laws. He's threatened to on a number of times, and all
that's
of the
that's a good thing, you think?
Well, we do need some common sense measures, but typically the ideas that have come to his desk aren't ideal. We do need universal background checks. We do need red flag laws. Of course, now the NRA is telling him not to approve that, so he won't talk about that anymore. The other thing is, again, my list is vague, but it's about 6 months old. He signed an executive order that relaxed what was at least perceived as a law that you couldn't talk politics in the pulpit. If you're a preacher, you can't criticize the U.S. government or politics in your sermons, or you'll lose your nonprofit status. And that he signed an executive order modifying that law, and that's a good thing. You should, of course, be able to talk about anything you want in the pulpit as long as you're somehow tying it to the lessons or the sermon or whatever. So those are six things. I wish I knew what I wrote down Democratic Party about. The Democratic Party still exists. Maybe he's helping the Democratic Party by just being him.
Okay,
I guess
well,
so.
Right, maybe so.
Yeah, look at the number of presidential candidates who have come out. To that end, we have just received another email.
Yes, Stan said, I'd like to have Joe explain the negotiation style of waffling or saying I'm going to do this today and tomorrow, saying I'm going to do that. Blaming other people, be it Obama, Clinton, or his dog, for every wrong that has happened. Question is, Donald Trump ever at fault for his errors? We asked two different things. First of all, I think keeping people off balance in a negotiation is certainly a legitimate negotiating ploy. And I think he uses it very well. You may choose to say, oh, the man's irrational, erratic. He's going from one thing to another. But if it keeps his negotiating opponents, if you will, off balance, that's probably a way to achieve what he wants. I mean, there are other ways. I'm not saying there isn't more than one school of thought on this. But I happen to believe that, giving the appearance of being willing to consider almost anything on any given day is a good way to keep your opponents off balance. You know, and of course you could say, oh, well, the markets want stability, and that's true. The stock market, I think, has bounced up and down on the basis of what the president has done, simply because investors are like, what, nervous little sheep. I mean, you know, so they hear a gunshot, they go running in the opposite direction. They hear another gunshot, they reverse their course and go back the other way. Human nature, as you said, people want to make money. You know, so I think the stock market's probably going to react to that type of negotiating ploy. And the second part, blaming other people, be it Obama, Clinton, or his dog, for every wrong that has happened. Well, you know, it's interesting to me. What I found fascinating was when the president was touting how good the economy was, Barack Obama was reminding people, and the Democrats were reminding people, where did this all start? Well, it started under Barack Obama. Last week, when they saw the markets going the other direction, it was all Trump's fault. You know, the truth
well,
is...
Well, I think certainly the trend upward began in the Obama administration after the 2008 collapse, and it's been uphill ever since, so it certainly started then. And President Trump could have done things that would have derailed the recovery.
Just as Bill Clinton could have,
and now
didn't.
We're starting to, peak Bill Clinton? He had nothing to do with this.
No, I'm saying Bill Clinton did the same thing. The economy started taking off. He stayed out of its way. He worked with the Republicans to get things done. I think President Trump would like to work with the Democrats, but I don't think the Democrats want to do anything that would even be remotely perceived as giving him a victory.
Right, because it would appear as though that he's rational enough to negotiate, which they don't think that he is.
I mean, their narrative has to be that this man is completely irrational, undeserving of another term, damaged goods.
Well, that's all true. All right. I mentioned
in Marktopia
this.
It is. But
I mentioned this a
world.
Couple of times. U.S. Congressman Fred Keller is doing an objective, empirically studied official way to find out what people think about the minimum wage and mailed out to some constituents over the weekend. Did you get this by chance?
Yes, I did.
Okay, it says, "Dear friend, as your recently sworn in representative, it's an honor to represent you in Congress. During my time in the district, I've been hearing concerns from business owners about raising the minimum wage to $15 per hour, with many businesses saying it would impact..."
Small
businesses saying it would impact their ability to keep their doors open. "I want to hear your thoughts. Do you agree or disagree with proposals that would raise the federal minimum wage to $15 per hour?"
This is a typical political question phrased to give you the answer you want.
Right.
It's, you know, in all honesty, I'm sure Fred had nothing to do with this. I'm sure it's from the National Republicans suggesting you put it out, but raising the minimum wage to $15 per hour, with many small businesses saying it would impact their ability to keep their doors open. On the other hand, many people say that, you know, raising the minimum wage will increase economic efforts and, you know, will produce positive benefits. So there's only one side of this issue phrased here. The businesses that say it'll be hard for them to keep their doors open. It doesn't talk about the argument people on the other side of the issue make, which is that it would improve living conditions for people, provide additional economic boost to the area. You know, so it's
designed... Well, whoever heard of a survey with a question? We're doing an empirically sound study that will give us good answers that we can use in our negotiations. Here's the question.
Right. Agreed. Disagree or unsure?
Unsure. How about come up with a real survey that actually tells you if what's your view, if you're a business owner, if you have to pay all of your workers $15 an hour, and maybe you didn't have to up to now,
but here's the real,
what impact, if any, would that have?
You're missing the line that is the real objective of this survey.
Oh, I saw that at the bottom. "By answering this survey, you're agreeing to receive future communications from the Office of Congressman Fred Keller. And it's unspoken, it's not written here, don't be surprised if you get hit up for some fundraising later."
Well, that's part of what they have to do. You know, I get all these official-looking things as a registered Republican. The president wants to know how you feel about this, and I get this big questionnaire. You know, mm-hmm. I can sign them to the trash can because, you know, it's obviously just looking for contributions in the end. You respond to it, and you suddenly get 25 more emails.
1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. Oh, we got a follow-up. We had to read this before the break.
Says, "So, Joe, happy with the President of the United States, the band that you call the leader of the free world being a laughing stock at the G7? Don't listen to the commentators on Fox or WMSNBC. Just listen to what the leaders say. They had to keep the child out of the sandbox so we wouldn't throw sand."
He wouldn't throw sand.
Well, he says we wouldn't throw sand.
He wouldn't throw sand.
He says we. I read it. I got chastised.
Why would the parents throw sand?
I got chastised for making changes to people's emails. I don't make changes
so you
anymore.
Don't do it
I just
anymore.
Read
you
them.
Read them. All right, 1-800-795-9565. We're talking about just how bad our president is, and Joe fully agrees, so we will take a quick break.
I do not.
All right, we'll be right back.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
As is often the case, we have talked about President Trump And if you'd like to weigh in on some of our remarks so far, call us 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. We have an update from the newsroom on that fire overnight. Point Township Fire Chief Jim Geis tells us that a neighbor reported the fire and said a homeowner was there at the time and got out okay. Of course, a half a dozen volunteer fire companies responded. A blaze was well involved upon arrival, and the house was already fallen down by the time crews got there. The home's a total loss. State Police Fire Marshal is en route to the scene. Red Cross has been notified, and he says crews were done at the scene around 6 a.m. today after that fire in Point Township. Okay?
Okay. We're going to talk about San Francisco for a minute. I don't really think we got your comment on this, and I'd be interested in hearing what some of our listeners feel. San Francisco, a city described in song for its natural beauty, is descending into an abyss of homelessness, the use of sidewalks as toilets, and a place you might not want to visit, much less live. The latest, but surely not the last, demonstration of insanity is San Francisco's Board of Supervisors' adoption of the new person-first language guidelines meant to change the public's perception of criminals. The words convicted felon, offender, convict, addict, and juvenile delinquent are out. These individuals will henceforth be referred to as a justice-involved person. Someone previously called a criminal will now be referred to as a returning resident or a formerly incarcerated person. Let's see, formerly incarcerated person is like 10 syllables, criminal 3. So they're going to replace... They're going to be yakking a lot in San Francisco. Supervisor Matt Haney told the San Francisco Chronicle the intent is to keep people from being forever labeled for the worst things they have ever done. We want them ultimately to become contributing citizens, and referring to them as felons is like a scarlet letter they can never get away from. A noble objective, to be sure, but language has, or used to have, a purpose beyond interpersonal communication. Like so much else today, language has now been appropriate to advance political agendas. The encroachment of euphemisms on common sense is everywhere. Illegal immigrants have become undocumented workers. Babies in the womb lose their humanity when they are labeled fetuses. Euphemisms are most used to hide a more accurate description of behavior or status in order to avoid conflict or not injure someone who might be offended or hurt. It fails to communicate anything meaningful while claiming to do so. George Orwell called it newspeak or doublespeak. So we're now justice-involved individuals.
Not an arrestee or a
returning
felon.
Residents, right. And not a convicted felon, a returning resident.
Returning from prison.
Well, we're not saying that. We don't say prison. What we need to think of another name for prison. Something that sounds...
Rehab.
Enforced residence, forced residential.
Three hots and a cot.
Enforced residential.
Three hots, a cot, and a bar, a lock, really secure locks.
Well, you know, I understand the goal, and it's not a bad goal. You know, at some point, I would agree with you on that, but this is getting ridiculous. A justice-involved person. So what does that mean? Well, it means they were convicted of a crime, and they are an offender. They're a convicted felon
or
offender.
Technically, you're a justice-involved person because you're a mayor, and in your level of borough, you oversee the police department, so you're involved in criminal justice. So you're a justice-involved person.
That's true. I am. But I'm not a returning resident.
Rob might have paid a parking ticket one day or something. So you're a justice-involved person. You're a justice-involved person. Everybody's a justice-involved person.
But that doesn't mean we're criminals.
No, definitely not. Nor a felon.
So the next thing would be, in San Francisco, it would be illegal to look up someone's criminal history.
It would just be their justice history.
Well, no, but I mean, how could you justify looking up their criminal history if we're not going to refer to them as criminals? I agree. You know, once somebody has paid their debt to society, they should be allowed to go on with their life and be given another chance.
Even own a gun?
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far. At some
point, they get to vote again, right?
I would give them the right to vote again, yes, after their sentence had been completed. Not voting in prison the way some of these people want to do, no. I mean, there has to be some price you pay for the crimes you commit, over and above just doing your time.
But being labeled forever might not be part of it. Well, you and I both know people who've been in trouble with the law and maybe even served jail time, but today they're productive members of society and active members of their church, and they're doing a super job.
And they have demonstrated by their conduct and their character that what happened to them originally was an aberration. It's not the way they plan to live the rest of their life. Those people, I agree. I would even go back and say, if you have a certain amount of time that you've lived crime-free and contributed to the community, that your record should automatically be expunged.
Like 20 years or something.
I don't know what the number is. But well, you're right. We do know people who have made significant contributions to the life of the community who at one point in their life had done something or been involved in something that I'm sure they regretted.
Well, and I think there's a lot of crimes that people do that are the one-and-done aberrations. And while they probably had a victim at the time, there isn't sort of a lasting victim. In other words, if you are charged with theft from a business, it certainly is an impact on that business, but it can be repaid. And 5 years out from that significant loss, even if it's not repaid, it may not have any impact on the business, and the business continues to thrive. So therefore, if the business is recovered and you've paid the money back, and 20 years hence you've lived an exemplary life, by, you know, some sort of a judge's standard. You know, you and I would use occupation and religion as a standard, but I'm sure a judge could come up with better...
Well, I would think just their life, the way they live their life. If they have been honest, they've accepted positions of responsibility, discharged their obligations seriously.
And they no longer do anything criminal.
Right.
They might just be getting away with it, though.
Well, that you don't know, I guess, but...
You never know.
The simple fact is that there are many people who have, as I said, made significant contributions after having initially served time in prison. But changing what you call them, I don't think really helps. What would really help is after a certain period of time, their record would be expunged.
Well, I was a justice-involved person as a child. We got caught on the local business's roof after climbing up the telephone pole on the outside.
Well, I served on a jury once. That makes me a justice-involved individual.
No, but I was waved down by a police officer who said, "Hey, you kids, get off that roof."
And yesterday, a police officer provided you assistance,
well,
which makes
yeah,
you
Shemokin,
a justice-involved
right,
individual.
Shemokin Dam Police, always super helpful. But anyway, so we have a read some of the key words that are the new phrases. We'll talk about those, and we'll take a quick break.
Well, the new phrases are, let's see here, justice-involved person, someone who had previously been called a criminal will now be referred to as a returning resident or a formerly incarcerated person.
Okay. A returning resident. Well, that's a little vague. And formerly incarcerated, it might be just a little too specific.
Well, what else would you call them?
A returning citizen. They were still a citizen while they were in prison.
I mean, the whole idea that we can soften language to make things more acceptable, you know, like the classic is undocumented worker. Well, why is he undocumented? Well, because he's here illegally. So he is an illegal immigrant.
But he's a person first. So he's a person who's here illegally. Remember, a lot of these people wish you to describe the individual first rather than a mentally ill person or a mentally retarded person. That it's a person with an intellectual disability.
Shakespeare solved this for us a long time ago. A rose by any other name smells just as sweet.
Well, okay. All right, 1-800-795-9565. Call us now. We're talking, it's not really political correctness, but it's revising our lexicon so that...
it's political correctness.
Okay, so yeah, Joe doesn't like it. It's funny, you're really waffling on this. You like the idea of helping
cleaning the record. Yes, I do, but I don't think this does it. This is like putting a flowered hat on an old cow.
Okay.
Or lipstick on a pig.
There we go. But if you need bacon, guess what? You're going to need that pig. All right, we'll take a quick break. On the Mark, brought to you by the Sunbury Motor Company, as we mentioned, and we'll hear from them a little bit later on. And time to take a call.
Calls coming in.
All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the Mark on the topic of, political correctness or revising our names for individuals. You wouldn't have to call somebody who's an ex-con, a former felon. You could call them...
altruistically challenged.
Okay.
Like that one.
They might just be. To that end, we got a couple of calls. Frank, you're on the Mark. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, good morning. I've been to San Francisco a lot. California, in fact, I've probably visited that state more than any place in the United States, and Ann Arbor, Michigan, and probably Florida, Texas. But the description and the framing of that article that you've read it sounds like someone has a real problem with some of the citizens who, without doubt, there's every city's got its issues and problems, urinating in the street, caught my ear, you know, just a deplorable condition. You know, San Francisco is a place where you can spend time out in the evening and it's safe. It's one of the safest cities in America. Low crime rate. It's also pictured as one of the, being in the movies, one of the highest murder homicide states, and that's just absolutely ridiculous. But you know, I'm going to go with the point that, you know, a person who does, let's use the gospel metaphor, repent from their sins, and the gospel calls it a sin, you know, that person really wants to detach themselves from what they may have made, that huge mistake. But if there's a repetitive offender, you know, they deserve the label. This won't stick, giving them a kinder metaphor, legal definition. It'll never stick. I can still remember kids in high school or classmates who got caught smoking pot. It stuck with them to this day. I can remember people who are just, you know, they make bad choices. The words aren't going to stick. I just am curious as to who wrote that article and where you found it. That was one of my questions.
Go ahead.
It was written by Cal Thomas. That's the author's name.
Columnist.
He's a columnist for Tribune Media Services.
All right, I'll have to Google that. And I just want to find out where this concept is. And is this an actual real proposal, or is it just...
It's a real proposal.
Fantasy writing.
The city, wait a second, the latest, let's see here. They adopted it. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors adopted, and they call it person first language.
Okay, person first.
Meant
okay.
to change the public's perception of criminals.
All right, they probably have a lot of repeat offenders there. Okay. All right, well, San Francisco is not as horrible as what it was depicted in that article.
All right.
But there are stories about the fact that police are not arresting people for defecating or urinating in the streets. The homeless population.
Actually, you know that area where they're talking about. I was down there. Was it 29th Street over? It is a lower class, I'll say that. And you know, there is the winos, and they have nothing to do all day. Yeah, they need to get their butts in jail. I mean, they need to be cleaned up and be arrested. They should go down there and take care of that. Because if that's the only negative of that city, yeah. I just have a different opinion.
Well, they said that they were publishing maps of areas to avoid so that you didn't step in the feces in the street.
Oh, jeez.
That's part of the story I spared people from here.
I'll tell you, the city I would move to retire to, is San Antonio or Sedona, Arizona. Those cities are incredible. So,
yeah, a friend of mine just came back from Sedona, and he raves about it, so...
It is fantastic. You cannot help but love that scenery. And it's just a great place.
Thank you so much, Frank.
I appreciate your call, Frank.
Appreciate
call again.
Call. Al, you are on the mark.
Another word, yeah, good morning. Another word they changed to soften it is baby, carrying a baby in your belly to a fetus in the womb. That desensitizes it and...
Oh, if you don't call it a person, call it a fetus.
Yes,
well, that's what it is.
That was in the story, too.
Yeah, that's like a scientific term or maybe a medical term.
But what is a fetus if not a baby?
What is a baby if not
a
fetus? At that point.
You know, they tell the girls that they're trying to get abortions that, you know, it's just a fetus. They can't feel anything.
Remember one of our callers said it's just a clump of...
It's not really life. It's just a mass.
It's a parasite.
Yeah, it's just a parasite in your body growing. You can either have it or not. So that's how they soften that. It's just a play with words. And then I heard another article thing on Glenn Beck this morning, where if you go into a bed and breakfast, these big bed and breakfasts, and Uber, now that they can give you a bad mark, and then you can't get a ride with Uber anymore.
If it turns out you're liberal.
That's up to the individual that's driving an Uber.
If you're liberal, you mean.
Individual, and it's all over the world now, and it's even different communications, and it's equivalent to if you were naughty on that communication and they didn't like what you did, they can, you're done. You can't communicate that anymore. You can't communicate on that anymore. So it's just they scan your, and when you go into a bar, they scan your identification, and then they share it with everybody all over the world, and you're done. And it stays on there for 5 years.
You mean if you're conservative, they find out, then they won't let you ride an Uber?
You can get it for a mega hat.
Well, that makes sense. That's a good thing.
Well, did you hear about the fella whose wife encouraged him to, I think it was either in Portland or Seattle, to wear his mega hat to a bar? They went in three or four bars. Finally, he was pretty savagely beaten up by some people who didn't like his mega hat.
I had people down at the Riverfest take pictures of me with my hat and my shirt on, and I asked them what they were going to do with that.
Oh, I saw a lot of MAGA stuff.
Another girl was proud and really happy that I wore it. And I walked around like that all Friday, and part of, no, I didn't wear it Saturday because I was on duty. But I walked around Friday with it on, and I didn't have any problems. I went over, talked to the Democratic thing. So it's not as bad around here, but I only had one guy that wouldn't say hello to me, and I asked him, I had my shirt on and my signed hat on, and I asked him, was it the hat or the shirt?
Well, there was a...
And he just kept on going.
Near...
the guy's familiar, but there was only one person that wouldn't speak to me.
Near where you were, there was a stand selling MAGA flags. And memorabilia and stuff. So I'm sure they sold some stuff. All right. Thank you so much, Al. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for being a great listener. Thanks for being a great painter, too. We appreciate that. 1-800-795-9565. Last break of the day. Call us immediately. We have one email pending with somebody who's not happy with what the president is interested in doing. We'll take more comers. We have talked about political correctness in San Francisco. They're very interested in using perfect person-first language where they say you're not a felon or a former inmate, that you are a justice-involved person. Some of these new forms of the language recently approved. So let's take the break. 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. I read my list of President Trump's six good things.
Yeah, but you don't know why one of them.
I don't know why I wrote down Democratic Party, although he certainly has, what do you say, enhanced them or...
He has.
Helped them a little bit. 1-800-795-9565.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Welcome back to the WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the Mark, 9:55 in the morning. Speedy dialers only. Rapidly dial 1-800-795-9565. Rapidly clack out on the mark at WKOK.com or rapidly text 70236.
One of our writers says, good morning. President Trump said in his campaign he would not touch Social Security. Now he wants to cut $26 billion from Social Security. Liar, liar, pants on fire.
Only if reelected, though.
Well, and it's not, if you read the story from an objective source, he's talking about reforming Social Security, not cutting it.
Yeah, all that money going to them old people.
And then most of the changes...
That needs reform.
Most of the changes would affect providers, not recipients.
Okay.
So...
Another listener.
Another listener, Bob, says, good morning, Mark. I thought the question was for you to name six things Trump did wrong. That would be 10 times easier.
Yeah.
You have a list of, you said you have a list of 96 things.
Right. I forgot that list. I ran out of paper or something.
I think
I never actually listed that list.
Slightly.
Right. But as he's done correct things, I've added an element to the list, although I'm not sure what he did to
all
the
right,
Democratic
Party. You saw the coverage of him at the G7. Was he a drooling, frothing at the mouth baboon, as MSNBC would have you believe?
I think he misunderstood the questions that were shouted over the din in the room at the one place where, you know, he said he had second thoughts, and then everybody made a big deal out about that, and then the White House says, well, yeah, second thoughts, and that was that they weren't severe enough, not second thoughts. So I don't think that helps anything when you're doing this shouting over the table. It seemed to me that he was expressing that he had second thoughts, meaning that he was hesitant, but at the same time, then the White House said no. In fact, his only second thought was that they weren't severe enough.
Well,
so I thought he was portrayed okay. He seemed like he was, you know, large and in charge, as he always does.
He's had meetings with our allies, whom, according to one of our writers here, are just barely tolerating the man, and yet the pictures of him smiling with them and the fact that he's got trade agreements with some of them.
He's probably getting better at this, I would think, you know, the diplomatic side of this, which is not his nature.
Well, I would think that the people on the left would be far better off to acknowledge the things he does that are good and only condemn him solidly on the ones that are less than good. But by condemning him on everything and saying that when he's on the national stage or an international stage that he's basically a frothing-at-the-mouth lunatic doesn't really help the country, and it certainly doesn't help their cause, because he's not that way.
Well, it would help their cause.
And I think what he's done,
supporting Democrats.
What he's done is very smart. You know, they terribly mistreated Sarah Huckabee Sanders when she was holding those daily press briefings. I mean, they were just awful to her. So the president says, we're not having them anymore. I'll answer questions on my way to the helicopter or other places. And, you know, you notice they don't say, as they did with Obama, that it's been so long since he held a press conference. President Trump meets with the media almost on a daily basis, answering their shouted questions. What they don't like is he fires back at them. When they ask him a biased question, he tells them it's a biased question, and I'm going to give you a biased answer.
Ask a better question, in other words.
Well, you know, he certainly fires back, and he certainly defends his positions. And, of course, then they call him practically a liar. The one reporter from not MSNBC, but from NPR, asked him a question and why he supported something, and said, well, basically, your position here is considered by many to be an outright lie. You know, but he defended why he said what he said. Oh, it was over whether Russia was expelled from the G8 because of it annexed the Crimea or because President Obama wanted them out. You know, and the president has consistently said that President Obama was tricked by Putin.
Okay.
You know, so it's all politics. You know, frankly, it's all politics. And I think when our president is on foreign soil, whether it be Barack Obama or Donald Trump, that we should treat them with respect and hopefully root for them, not hope that they make some big mistake and screw up so we can wave our finger in their face and say, you are frothing at the mouth, you lunatic.
Tomorrow we'll read an article that says Bernie Sanders is rude.
Well, this is a fascinating story.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, out of a restaurant he attended, and he lost the vote of the restaurateur. Said
right.
He was grumpy.
He probably is. We're going to talk about that, plus anything else, any other divisive tweets that may happen to come out, or all of them, in the next 24 hours.
Maybe a uniting tweet.
And 96 bad things the president's done. This is WKOK Sunbury.